Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Drugs?
Thank you. No, I'm straight.
I meant, are you in here for drugs?
Why are you here?
Drugs.
I don't know why I'm here.
Why don't you go home?
Why don't you put your thumb up your butt?
You wear too much eye makeup. My sister wears too much. People think she's a whore. You don't want to talk about your problem?
With you, are you serious?
I'm serious.
Yourself. All right. You want to know what's wrong?
I know what's wrong. Just want to hear you say it.
In a nutshell, I hate my brother. How's that?
That's cool. Did you blow him away or something?
No, not yet. See, I went home to confirm that this head was ditching school, and when I was there, a guy broke into the house. I called the cops, and they picked me up for making a phony phone call.
What do you care if your brother ditches school?
Why should he get to ditch when everybody else has to go?
You could ditch.
Yeah, I'd get caught.
So you're pissed off because he ditches and doesn't get caught, is that it?
Basically.
And your problem is you.
Excuse me?
Excuse you. You ought to spend a little more time dealing with yourself, a little less time worrying about what your brother does. That's just an opinion.
What, are you a psychiatrist?
No.
Why don't you keep your opinions to yourself?
Somebody you should talk to.
If you say Ferris Bueller, you lose a testicle.
Oh, you know him.
Hello, it is 29 minutes after the hour of 1, and this is the month of March of the year of our Lord, 2011. Thank you for drawing near, that ye might be amused and informed. Don Taylor's putting on lip gloss. Is it lip gloss? Is it MAC lip gloss?
No, it's,
Is it something from Woolworths?
It's something that the words are so tiny, I can't tell what it is.
Okay. Nothing but the best for you.
It's from Elf Cosmetics online. ELF, Eyes, Lips, Face, Elf.
I see. Okay.
It's liquid lip stuff in a tube.
I think I know what you're talking about there. Yeah. Zam. All right. So forth. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's liquid stuff for your lips in a tube. Thank you for joining us. It is Wednesday, and welcome to Day 12. It is Wednesday, March 2nd. 2011. If you would like to join us telephonically today, you can do that. You'd be a fool not to take advantage of the opportunity to interact with us in any number of ways. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. You can also email us if you like, if that's your pleasure, if that's your thing, if that's what gets you off, you sick little monkey. It's Rick at RickEmerson.com. It is Rick at RickEmerson.com. You can also email Dawn if you like. It is Dawn, D-A-W-N. At RickEmerson.com, RickEmersonShow.com. This is Dawn at RickEmersonShow.com.
And if you're going to email me, man, today is the day to do it.
Because?
I'm having an awesome day. I will, I can tell you about it after we, take care of business, if you like.
All right.
Am I throwing y'all off now?
No, it's just, I'm just getting all these, I don't know, sometimes there's just crazy in the air. I mean, and not just because of the Sheen thing. I mean, you'd think he was hogging all the crazy. There wouldn't be any left over for anybody else. But, I mean, it's just one of those things where, you know, because I was about to say that you can also message us via Skype if you like. That is Rick Emerson Show. That is the username at Skype. And so then immediately before I even said anything, before there's even the thing out of my mouth, is somebody sends us a link about a guy who woke up in Roseburg to find that his dog had eaten his leg. That's followed by, have you seen this thing at McDonald's? It's a McLobster. Oh, my God. And then this just, and then after the McLobster, there's somebody else who just messages in all caps, of course, you know, making their witness Howard Beale style, and just says, we are listening. The show is risen. Praise be to the many eyes of God and the bodily humerus. The show is risen.
Wow.
It's freaking me out. I'm going to close. It's all the same to you, friend. I'm sure that whatever you've got is, I'm sure whatever God has to say through you as his vessel is important, but
holy moly.
I'm going to minimize it for about 35 seconds so I get the rest of this done. Anyway, it is Rick at RickEmerson.com. That is Rick at RickEmerson.com. Dawn at RickEmerson.com is the email address for Dawn Taylor, who will have headlines for you in just a moment. Coming up today, we got Mr. Aaron Mesh going to be joining us from Willamette Week. We'll be talking about the cover story that is in the new issue. So he, and all I know is the one sentence description. I haven't had a chance to read the actual article itself, but he forwarded a thing along to Cheryl. Says he wrote the cover story in this week's Willamette, which is about a church that was dosing its child. Congregants, attendees with some sort of hallucinogenic tea. So I don't really know anything beyond that. I mean, it seems like it's all kind of there on the surface, and yet it's not.
That so. You know, that's the sort of thing that would go really well with a sweat lodge.
Yes, yes, it would.
I'm just saying.
So we'll talk to Aaron Mesh about that. We've also got a top five coming up later in the day. The top five songs that Rick Emerson, that is me, uses to get himself into show mode. So top five coming up later on. Also, Penis Watch, Geek Watch, really just more Sheen than you can shake a fist at. And we got your clue number three for the EH Vending Name That Snack Contest. That is the EH Vending Name That Snack Contest coming up later on. Clue number three for today, that is Wednesday's clue. Clue number three brought to you by EH Vending. Find out more about them at EHVending.com. Last but certainly not least, I suggest that later on we'll be talking more about this, but Dawn Taylor's going to be performing another installment of Ham Fisted Radio.
I am!
At Cascadia.fm this afternoon, 4 p.m. Pacific time, along with Bobby Fatboy Roberts. I'd like to say that I'm going to be sitting near the speaker and just hanging on every word that you utter and just...
No, you've never listened to a single episode of
that's
my
not
podcast,
true.
Have you?
That is not true at all. I resent the implication that I have not listened to your podcast. I have, in fact.
Oh, that was no implication. I would just flat out say...
Well, you know that's not true. I've been on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, that's right. But that's not the same as actually listening to it elsewhere.
Those are the best episodes to hear, Don.
I've been on lots of things that I've never, like, actually watched or listened to later on.
I'm just saying I choose to listen to it live and in person. So, you know. Anyway, so that's coming up later on today at Cascadia.fm, 4 p.m. I don't even know what else there is to say about this, but I would be listening because I am probably enough will...
Yes.
Somebody hasn't gotten the bad acting memo because I have yet another audition for. But of all things, what is the most unlikely thing I could be auditioning for now?
Wow,
it's not actually that difficult if you think about it.
An advertisement for a gym?
No. See, you're making it way too difficult.
Oh.
The field is much narrower than that. What by definition should I not be auditioning for?
I don't know.
I should not, at this point, be auditioning for leverage.
Oh, yeah, well, no.
Because either I'm playing the same guy...
I thought we were just talking about, like, a whole oeuvre or something.
No, right? Well, no, that would just be everything. That would just be things that people watch. Because by definition...
You're already on leverage!
That's... Okay, this is... Thank you for joining the party. Thank you for sitting down at the table with the rest of us. That's what I'm saying. Because by... There's only two outcomes. Either the one, they would want to have me play the same guy, in which case... They'd be making me audition for it, which means that I suck so terribly that they would just... why wouldn't they just have replaced me?
Yeah.
Or I'm playing somebody else, which I guess is sort of intriguing, because then it's like one of those sort of like wormhole in the galaxy things where, like, if I'm playing some guy, Tom Jepinski, Well, yeah. Then it's like, does Tom Jopinski live in the same universe as CNN international anchor?
It would be so cool.
What if they met each other?
If you just, like, were on every few months playing a completely different person with two lines, and then they just wait to see if anyone notices.
It could be so,
wait, isn't that the same guy who was in CNN international anchor?
So I'd be sort of the Where's Waldo of the leverage world.
Yeah.
So it'd be, they could make a contest out of it, maybe. Mm. See if you can spot character actor Rick Emerson.
I like it.
All right. So, anyway, so I'm, I swear to God, I am...
What are you auditioning for? What's the part?
I swear to Christ, I'm auditioning for the part of a millionaire.
Really?
Yeah.
With an accent? Do you get to do an accent?
No, and in fact, I'm sure that everybody got this note in their email. It actually says in all caps, no accent required.
For the love of God, like don't do an accent.
Like at the biggest point size you could possibly imagine in the email, just please, no accents. So.
Oh, God. Could you go in and do your audition with a little pencil mustache?
I could.
Like a little John Waters pencil mustache.
That top hat.
That would be so awesome.
I think it just says something like, it says like business casual or whatever. So I'm just going to wear like a black button up or something. Mm-hmm. But I could totally get spats and just, see.
Just keep calling everyone my good man.
And just ending everything with a villainous laugh. Sort of a...
But you might be a nice millionaire. You could be a good millionaire.
Yeah. Here's the thing. It's like
Just put a big wad of $1 bills in your pocket, and just when you walk in the room to read, just walk up to the table, just hand everybody a buck.
Or what if I just twirled a pocket watch? I got a fob and just sort of, it's untucked.
Here, buy yourself a little something. Here you go.
Have you seen the steamer? Will it be this way soon? See, here's the thing about it. Here's why you shouldn't say that stuff to me. Because I am just like, I live permanently on the brink of just not caring at all.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I don't care, clearly. I mean, it's like I audition for this. I mean, Maury calls me and he goes, hey, kid, I got you another one of them leverage auditions. And I say, thanks, Maury, I'll be there with boots on, or whatever, bells, or whatever it is you put on to get there. And so I go, and I audition, and it's like when I improbably enough got that one part, like, we pre-taped the whole show, and I took the whole day off, and I went there, and I sat in my air-conditioned trailer and ate cookies. And then I went and I said my two lines. I went home. So I'm just saying, which isn't like hard work. It is a disruption of my routine. And, typically I try to eschew those things. So it's not like I don't care. But I sort of live on the perpetual verge of just not caring. Because, can't really act. B, because, like, even if I thought I could act or if I could, in point of fact, perform well as an actor, like... I'm at the point in my life where it's just, well, we've talked about this before, that it's like you get to be 25 and you realize you're not going to play for the NBA. You're 30, you're not going to be a rock star. There's nothing you could threaten me with that would be sufficient to me to decide to try to make it as an actor, like as my career. No. First of all, ever. And secondly, at this point in my life, there is no way. There is no way on God's green earth. Even if I did like really, really, really well in some episode of Leverage, and if my notices were very favorable, if I was well received in my role as a guy, and they said, he's fantastic. The pocket watch thing, it's gold. Kid, you should move to L.A. and we'll get you. I have zero interest in doing that.
An old friend of mine from back in my Renaissance Fair days was on an episode of Chuck this week, which I don't watch Chuck, so I just heard this from him and some friends, where it's like saying, oh, J. Paul Moore is going, and he actually sent it out on like Twitter and stuff. It's like, I will be on Chuck this week playing Henry VIII. Now, since I don't watch Chuck, I have no idea why he would be on an episode of Chuck playing Henry VIII.
Maybe he's playing the Herman Hermit song of the same name.
Maybe. But if you're a listener and if you watch Chuck and you saw Henry VIII on it, it's like, I know that guy.
Wait, now that's not the guy from Parks and Rec.
No, this is a different guy.
Okay, because the guy was like, mayonnaise is a fruit or whatever. Yeah. It's a different guy.
No, that's a different guy I know from when I worked at the Renaissance Fair.
Here's the thing about being an actor is that, and again, I'm not saying I don't respect actors. I mean, it's just, it's not... I will sometimes knock the acting profession. Or just, like the last time I auditioned for whatever it is, the mattress commercial or something. And, I'm just sitting there and the guys are like putting sparkly eye drops in. And a woman's, these people say I look really deep in my headshots. And it's just retarded. But that doesn't mean that I enjoy the films and television programs and, many varieties. But, you can enjoy something while also recognizing, which is, I think this is one of the reasons why people dislike actors so much. Because actors, not unlike Scientologists, have no sense of their own absurdity. I won't say that that's a blanket statement, but generally speaking, you find that musicians, like your average guy in a rock band, like they realize just how silly and strange and over the top and absurd the whole thing is sometimes. Actors seem to have, in many situations, they seem to have no ability for self-deprecation, and they have no ability to laugh at themselves and what they do for a living. And instead, they're always talking about, like, you know, they're always talking about reaching deep inside to the core of what makes you human and trying to see with the third eye, trying to use the over-logic so that you might convey to the... And you're going, you just stand on stage and just say crap that other people wrote, and then you walk over to where the tape on the floor is, and then you go home. You know, it's not like it's a real job, you know, like you're putting up a brick wall in a sewer somewhere.
It's not like being a high priest, Vatican assassin, vampire.
Exactly. But then again, really, what is? So, you know, I'm just saying there's a fundamental absurdity about acting. It's just unlike this. Like we always say that, you know, we are just a half a shade above rodeo clowns. I have all of the self-awareness of that in the world. So that's why it's dangerous for you to put ideas in my head. Like this guy says, you should just get a top hat, take Max or Philo with you, and then hand everybody community chess cards when you walk in.
Yeah.
Because if you say that enough, I'll do it, is the problem.
I think the reason I say things like that is on some level I know that if you're like me at all, and I think we've established that in a frightening number of ways you are, when you're in a situation that is very serious and there is some pressure, there's this little part of your brain that just goes, what's the most inappropriate thing I could do right now?
Totally. It's like a turn into the skid
sort
of a thing. You're like, I feel slightly uncomfortable. And I think
what would be the most ridiculous thing I could do right now?
I think here's where that comes from. I think it's the feeling of, I feel slightly uncomfortable, but it's like, how do I put this? It's like if you feel like you have body odor someday, you go to work and you feel like maybe you offend a little bit, you have a little bit of underarm scent. You know, you're thinking, well, how can I solve this? What if I were to spill a gallon of raw sewage in the room?
Yeah.
Nobody would notice sort of how awful I smell because it would just be lost. So you're thinking, well, how can I just make this the most uncomfortable and inappropriate situation imaginable so that my own sort of discomfort and awkwardness and embarrassment about standing in front of people and trying to find my, you know, whatever, my motivation for doing a thing.
Yeah. Well, and also there's that I think everybody has a little bit of like this little self-destructive tendency inside of them. It's just that when you're somebody who thinks way too much about everything, as you and I are, you have those moments. Like, I remember sitting on the bus once, and I was looking at the back of the head of the woman sitting in the seat in front of me, and it was only about like 8 inches away from me. And I thought to myself, what would happen if I just bit the back of her head right now? And then I'm just going through the whole thing. It's like she would scream and they'd probably stop the bus and they'd drag me off and I would get arrested. And just going through this whole thing of like just the chaos that I could cause and how much I could completely destroy my own life if I just decided to make that 1 second decision to bite the back of that woman's head.
See, this is why I don't get high, because then you just think about that stuff. And what you would then also think about is how really at any given moment, all 6 billion people on Earth have that option. It is only by following the unspoken yet very real rules of the social contract that those things don't happen all the time. Now, there's like 7% of the population, and we'll get to a member of that 7% in just a moment.
Yeah.
Where they just said, like, F it. I'm not gonna play anymore. I am opting out of your game. But you realize that everybody, that's why, you know, it's like the whole thing about realizing that anybody could like steer into you in traffic. One of the many reasons I had to quit going to the barber, the guy in Gladstone that was cutting my hair. Because it's like he's cutting me with the, you know, he's using the straight razor, the blade.
Yeah.
And it's like you just know that guy's going to come to work someday and his wife will have dumped him. Or he's just like on the downside of a real bad hangover. Or the doctor found something malignant on his testes. And he just goes, well, I guess I'll just end it all now. You know, and just, no.
Patrick is actually afraid of those things. He has this an almost phobic fear of really super sharp blades. He can use an X-Acto blade or a box cutter. But I think it's because of his thing about blood. Scalpels just completely freak him out, the entire thought of scalpels. And I think maybe he's seen too many people get their neck, their throats cut with, like, barber's razors or something. Because the actual barber's razors, because I told him once he was going to some barber to get his hair cut. And I was like, ooh, you could get one of those, like, shaves with the thing. He's like, no, no one is ever coming near with me with one of those. No, no. And he actually got a little pale. It was like, no.
So. No, and it's like, and here, it sucks because the straight blade, the blade shave is, like, the best shave you can get. If you get the hot towel shave where they put you back and they wrap you with a hot towel and they put the lotion on and then they, you know, and then they take and they use the razor strop. You could get that done, and it's like, seriously, it is like a skip a day with, like they always say with the deodorant. Like, you could get a blade shave and you probably don't have to shave for another day and a half. You could, I mean, it's awesome. But you just sit there and you realize, like, I am living at the pleasure of this person. I am only alive for the grace of God and, like, the non-crazy nature of the guy wielding the blade.
Yeah.
And you do think, well, if, like, 3% of the world is just flat-out nuts, like, what are the odds of, you know, because 3% of 6 billion people, that's many millions of people, I would imagine. And so you're like, what are the odds that, you know, you're just you're banking on the fact that you are not with that guy. This is the same reason, like, when I was a young swinging single man, this did not happen very often because, you know, the obvious, but on those rare occasions, if I would make the acquaintance of a young lady, and if I was going to her house, and if I didn't really know, like, too much about her, or, like, you know, anything about her, I would do this. I would actually call my voicemail at work from my cell phone. This is back at, like, I don't know. I had, like, the big like Motorola. I had, like, the Gordon Gekko phone, and so you would just see me driving down the road talking into my cell phone, and I would be calling my office voicemail and just saying, hey, this is Rick. If for some reason I don't come into work on Monday, or I don't turn up, or you just find me, you know, like, with my head shaved and just sort of babbling somewhere in a ditch, I'm following a Lexus, and the license plate number is BQR, and I would just leave. And I did that several times if I was not quite sure about who I was, because
I went through a period of doing the Willamette Week dating in the personals and stuff when I first moved here and I wasn't seeing anyone and I was recently divorced, and I would do that. I would email, like, if I was meeting a guy someplace, particularly if I was going to, like, somebody's home and I'd only met him, like, once before, I would email the address of where I was going to somebody. Yeah. And, like, you know, because you don't know.
But don't turn up. Come look for me here.
When I first was seeing Patrick, we had just started dating. I think we'd only been seeing each other a couple of weeks. And I was going up the stairs, and he was standing behind me. And I took one step up the stairs, and he wrapped his arms around me and put, like, his arm around me, like, just under my chin. And I said, please don't snap my neck. And we had this moment. We went, why would you say that? And, well, I said, I don't know. It just occurred to me that you could snap my neck if you wanted to.
But then he didn't.
I don't think you should.
He didn't, and that's when you knew it was love.
Yeah.
The first night that you when you stayed over at his place and he did not stab you to death in your sleep, you went, well, okay.
He's a keeper.
He had the chance to kill me and didn't take it.
He didn't try to smother me with a pillow like that last guy.
At a certain point, you just have to, you know, you have to let go and let God, Don.
And every morning when I wake up, I go, whew, okay. Yeah. He still hasn't killed me.
That's why I don't. That's why Laura and I hew to that rule of don't go to bed angry, though, because, you know, you just never, you wake up with your head shaved.
Well, yeah. Well, and then you have, like, a whole Phil Hartman situation.
Yes, yes, you do.
You know, which it's like if we learned nothing from the tragedy of Phil Hartman, it's like, when you have an argument with your coked up wife, don't go to sleep.
Yeah. Well, and as I think Hunter Thompson said, you can turn your back on a person, but don't turn your back on a drug. That'll end badly for you. Hey, speaking of which, so Sheen, baby.
Sheen!
So here's the... So you didn't... I mean, did you not know it was on? Do you not own a VCR, at least? Did you not have any way to tape it?
I did not have any way to tape it, but it was on Hulu, and I could have watched it on Hulu, and I just failed. I had all these other things going on.
But let me... Seriously, what was the thought process behind not watching it? What did you decide to watch? I mean, once you got home and you had, you had to go to the film screening.
Yeah,
everything.
Yeah, I was at a movie last night.
There were many hours after that
until
between
9
now
o'clock.
Twixt then and now.
I watched crap. I got up this morning and I was working on other things, and there was this part of me that thought, oh, I should watch the Charlie Sheen thing, and I was like, well, Rick will bring in sound and we'll talk about it, and I don't know.
Or I could watch this old Moonlighting.
And I and instead I just was like catching up on a Hellcats and stuff. So I just failed with the chain.
Right.
But I did during the break in between the shows, I did watch about half of it.
It's freaking awesome.
And it is awesome.
It is like the best. See, because so often those things, they just don't live up to the hype, or it's just, you know, or they'll do that thing, especially in an interview like this, where they'll just, like the trailer gives it all away, where he adds, you know, coming tomorrow on 2020. And then they'll cut to the guy going like, I killed a whole bunch of people one time. They're in my trunk right now. You know, the shocking tale of, you know, but it's like that's then the only good thing in the interview. This was just nothing but moments that you would put in a trailer. It was like every single moment was a home run. Everything that came out of his mouth was like the tagline they would use to promote, you know, an interview. It was awesome. Everything he said, it was like everything that he said was a catchphrase. Right, starting with the whole, like, are you bipolar? I'm by winning. And it was like,
we start every day winning in our underwear. Or whatever that was, he said, before we have our coffee.
I mean, it's... and there's a great moment where she says... she's talking about how many drugs he's done, you know, how he was going through, like, you know, he was doing like 7 grams of coke, you know, at a time and whatever. And she said, how do you survive that? And he just said, because I'm me. And then he just gives this, like, fixed stare at the camera, which is just glorious. Yeah. I mean, it's glorious in ways that I just can't even... You know, and here's the thing, and I know that we're going to reach a point very soon where it's just going to be, people are going to start saying that they're tired of Charlie Sheen. Lies. If somebody's, we may get to that point eventually as a society, but I'm telling you right now, anybody who says that they're at the, I'm over Charlie Sheen, they are lying. Yeah, they are lying to you.
Yeah, because he's the perfect combination right now. He, right at this moment, he doesn't seem to be an immediate threat to himself or anyone else. So it's not like you have to go, it's not like we're, you know, watching him and getting joy out of his collapse or his fall. It's not like giggling at Lindsay Lohan, who is pathetic and just is killing herself and is going to end up in a ditch sometime in foreseeable future. And it is a little sad to have fun at her expense. Sheen, he's not doesn't seem to be immediately threatening to kill anyone. I'm not sure about the ex-wife who
also,
he said
they took his kids away.
Took his kids away, so the kids are safe. But yeah, he's just gloriously giddily in need of some kind of meds, and is sharing his crazy with all of us as like just this wonderful gift.
It really is. No, he is just like a Pandora's box of golden amusement. You know what he's like? He's like one elongated, you know, like many, many, many weeks in duration version of the good times sequence in a film. Where, you know, it's like it's the montage where the couple is met, or the guy just started the new job, or the band is out on the road playing their first gigs, and there's like a music, there's a song playing, and it's just a whole bunch of cut together scenes of like, now we're in Cincinnati, now we're in Boston, now we're in love, now we're running on the beach.
We're playing in a fountain, we're eating ice cream, we're riding bikes.
Totally, and those movies always then have the crash or the decline later on, you know, but they have the good times montage. This is a good times montage, or quite possibly this. I'm not suggesting that anybody in the Rick Emerson audience abuses their bodies with chemicals or drugs or, you know, drinks to excess. But there's that moment that many, many celebrities have talked about. That moment before the drugs turn on you, when you're just at the peak, you're at the apogee, right before it all starts to go bad. And I think normally that lasts, you know, however long. I think with Sheen, though, it's been slowed down and blown up for our amusement. And it seems to last a long, long time.
Well, some people are some people who are recovery experts are suggesting what he may be going through is something they call the pink cloud effect, which is when you first get sober, you have this sort of honeymoon period where you feel just physically awesome. And mentally sharp, and you feel like I have kicked this, and I'm on top of the world, and I'm handling everything. I have tiger blood. But the thing is, watching him, and particularly hearing him talk about how he doesn't sleep.
Yeah.
It seems more like he's in the middle of a prolonged manic episode.
Which is weird because not like I'm some sort of an expert or whatever, but I mean, typically that's not like a weeks long thing.
No.
Although there are, if you think about it. As much as he sort of seems to be everywhere, it's not like he's literally on television 24 hours a day. No. So he could be vanishing for 16 hours and just sitting and staring at a wall and weeping. We just don't know.
And sometimes these manic periods can last a really long time. I mean, I've read Carrie Fisher writing extensively about what she went through when she went off her meds deliberately. And yeah, she went like, you know, weeks at a time where it was like, you know, and now I'm going to paint a painting and now I'm going to get in my car and drive to Las Vegas. And now I'm going to like spend $400 on shoes. And now, and it's like just like boom, boom, just all this crazy. And it seems like it all makes sense at the time. And it feels awesome. That's the problem a lot of times with the whole manic depression thing, is that the depression is the downside. The manic is the upside. And the manic is the time when you're feeling like you're on top of the damn world. That's why manic depressives, that's why bipolar people often deliberately go off of their meds, is they, yeah, you know, the depression is being solved by the medication.
I have been imbued with greatness.
But they miss the manic periods. Because there is this insane sense of euphoria that goes along with the mania.
It really is just, somebody at one point in the interview, she asks him, she says, well, so you don't sleep? And he says, I don't sleep, I wait.
I sleep in cars, I sleep like on somebody's couch. I get a little sleep when I can.
I have a lion's blood.
But I got stuff to do, yeah.
God damn.
I love, my favorite part so far of what I saw the first time I saw it was his description of his birth.
Oh, yeah, when he was dead. He was a floppy baby.
Yeah, he was a floppy baby, and then his father was trying to come in the room with all this Catholicism, and the doctor was screaming, you know, you do your job, and I'll do mine. And then I was born, and my voice spoke and said, I'm here.
I would, really, here's what I want. I want somebody, like, over at Adult Swim to...
Oh.
I want like, not just, like, the courtroom sketches. I want full-on animated, full-motion, full-colored, surround sound artist renderings of the stories that Charlie Sheen tells. Like his birth. Wouldn't you love to see just, like, you know, you just get, like, your Getty Tartakovsky or your cow and chicken guy. Just, you know, like, hey, just, you know, please to animate that for me so I can watch it. That would be awesome. All right, in just a moment, we'll be joined by Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. Did you do headlines already?
No, I didn't.
Here's headlines Don Taylor's tracking today.
We do have the Charlie Sheen sounds that will be coming up later. I also have a Tennessee lawmaker who says dogs need seatbelts. And Sirhan lawyers says that Sirhan was hypnotized when he shot Robert F. Kennedy.
I was trying to make a repetition joke, like... I was hoping you were saying he was up for parole so I could say it was denied.
Oh.
But it didn't really, you thwarted me. Damn you!
Ah.
All right. Anyway, so that is all true. Here's what's coming up later on today. We got your Penis Watch, Geek Watch, Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week, top five songs used by me, Rick Emerson, to obtain show mode. We'll also got clue number three in the EH vending name, that snack contest. That is on the way. Those headlines. And then, yes, I will go off to, I forget the guy's name. I think it is just like a one-name character. I think his name is Harvey. So I will be auditioning for the role.
Harvey the Millionaire.
Harvey the Millionaire, who I believe is embittered because the lead villain has stolen his girl or his wife.
Oh,
I am the bill to the other guys. The other guy is the bill to my Hank Moody. I guess that's the deal.
You're a millionaire cuckold, is what you're saying.
Yeah, or just, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm better off without her because she was trying to quash my winning, Don. Maybe she went home where she will need all the luck that she can get. Here's the thing about, just real quickly before we talk to Aaron Mesh, the thing about this last night, so did you get to the part where they were talking about all living together and having like a big Portland-style polyamorous relationship?
A little bit of it, yeah.
Yeah, now it's, that is the sort of thing, see, the thing about the whole Sheen deal is that there are these moments, he's like this car weaving in and out of different lanes on the highway. And there's a lane marked, like, sane, and then there's a lane marked, like, bonkers. And then in the middle, there's this sort of, like, kind of an either-or lane, sort of a little bit of both, with the lines of demarcation not so finely drawn, where he says stuff that almost kind of makes sense. You know, if it wasn't being viewed through this kaleidoscope of just mental collapse that he's clearly undergoing. Because I was actually thinking something... early on in this, and then she actually sort of echoed it when she said that, you know, Sheen fancies himself a modern day Hugh Hefner, which was sort of what I was thinking. I was thinking, well, you know, this isn't in the more lucid moments of that interview. I was thinking, well, this isn't like so different from the way that Hugh Hefner lives, and we all think he's awesome. Mm-hmm. But then he would just like again, he would just collapse. Well, what makes you a good father? Everything. You know, and then he would just get the huge bug eyes like coming out of his head, and then he would start to sweat, and that's when you realize now there's something very different happening there.
There's also the thing where in that interview where the girls say, I have my relationship with Charlie, and she has her relationship with Charlie, and then we have our relationship with each other. And I don't know, it works. And then they cut to the two of them sitting at, like, the kitchen counter or whatever, and Charlie Sheen comes into the room, and he kisses one of them, and then he kisses the other one. But he kissed Brie Olsen, the porn star, second. And while he was kissing the first one, I swear to God, she had the pissiest look on her face. It was just this moment, but it was that look. And every woman knows what that look is of, like, I can't believe he's kissing her first. You know, and so you're going, yeah, everything's brilliant in your world.
That
I'm
seems
sure.
to be less of a problem with Charlie Sheen and more of a problem with Brie Olsen, frankly.
Yeah, but she had, there was that moment, it was unmistakable. She just got that look on her face, like, really?
We call that the big love problem, I think,
yeah.
Where it's just... Really, if there's anybody on God's green earth who doesn't deserve to complain about anything at this moment, I think it would be Brie Olsen, who by dint of having a plasticky vagina, probably hasn't paid for anything for the last 18 months.
No, so. And now just by, you know, through the sheer effort of boffing someone who's crazy, she has now increased her own, fame 1,000-fold. Because there are a number of people like you and me who didn't really know who she was until like 3 days ago.
No.
So this is working out. No, you didn't, because you
I
were
didn't,
like,
actually.
You know.
I do think, and then we really have to, we should ask Aaron Mesh. Maybe he's a porn aficionado. Who's
he
to
might
say?
Be. He does have that big stash.
Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Radio program from Willamette Week screen editor and stylish man of the world, Mr. Aaron Mesh. Hello, sir.
Greetings and tiger blood to you, sir.
How are you on this very fine Wednesday? How's your life? How are all things?
Well, things are well. How are you?
I'm good. Let me ask you this. On a scale of 1 to 9, where would you rate your enthusiasm for the world of pornography?
Oh, Rick. That's the kind of I just start out the day with. Where would I rate my enthusiasm for the world of pornography?
Would you say that you're a guy who never watches it, you're a guy who always watches it, or you're a guy who watches it now and again, but you're not like a collector or...
You know, I never pay for it. That's why God made the internet.
No, okay, so that's true.
That's where I put my enthusiasm level for it is, you know, if it's free, you know, I like free things.
I guess that maybe we can just sort of, maybe the litmus test for this is whether or not, because I didn't actually, is whether you knew, whether somebody knew Brie Olsen beforehand. Because I don't think I did, although the...
I don't know who Brie Olsen is now.
So she's one of the porn chicks who's banging Charlie Sheen.
Oh, they have names?
Well done. The other porn star, her name is Kaylee or Casey or something, and I do think I know her, but not for the reason that you might imagine, Don Taylor. I believe, now I could be wrong about this, because on the one hand, porn names are sometimes very distinct. On the other hand, they all sort of blend together. So it's like Pixie and Casey and Tracy and Brandy and Tiffany. But I think, although I do not know, that the other porn chick he's with, the one that's not Brie Olsen, has been in the news because I think she got caught on like one of those cop dash cams. I guess they all got caught on the cop dash cam, giving a cop like some sort of the hum job to get out of a speeding ticket. And I think that it actually, I think it's one of those things that the cop was like, show, like, hey, look who I pulled over today, and look what she did to get out of the ticket. And then I think it got stuck on the internet, and then it just became a whole thing. It was like an Iowa or someplace. So I don't know if that's her or not, but that was the extent to which I was familiar with one of the porn chicks. I think she may be in this sort of speeding ticket scandal that's happened. Did you watch the Sheen 2020 thing last night?
I did not. Does this Brie Olsen person have videos and whatnot?
Oh yeah.
If a porn aficionado were to look her up, would they find like a glut of what Charlie Sheen has had?
Videos and whatnot. Yes, she has. She has kinescopes available. There are wax cylinders of her whispering sweet nothings that you can. Hey,
you can see her ankle.
By the way,
wax something anyway.
Let me just say this. Casey Jordan is from Portland, apparently. Now, is Casey Jordan... Now I'm all confused. There were the two girls there last night. One of them is not Brooke Mueller, because that's the ex that he kicked to the curb.
Right.
Brie Olsen's a porn star. Was the other woman there last night, was that Casey Jordan? Because she was in... They kept calling her an interior, like a graphic designer or something.
I think so, yeah. Was her. I don't know.
Because Casey Jordan is from Portland. So the question is Casey Jordan the other girl, and is she a porn star? What are you...
I don't know. I'm just showing you. That's Charlie Sheen's latest tweet is a photograph of someone is selling a Charlie dog with tiger blood.
At the infield hot doggery.
Yes.
There's also a John Lovitz. I can't see
We should talk to Aaron about the things...
This has been a really good couple weeks for people who are crazy and like tigers.
It really is just... It's one of those moments where you feel like it's maximum overdrive and we're just going through the tail of a comet or something. And then eventually things will right themselves. And so we got to savor every moment that things, you know, that the crazy continues. Hey, so speaking of the crazy, so I don't really know anything beyond the sentence description that you sort of teased us with. But the new issue of Alignment Week is out and the cover story is by one Aaron Mesh, I believe. And this is about kids and a church and tea and hallucinogens and I don't know what all. Please to explain.
This is about the Portland sect of a Brazilian-based church. It's a syncretic religion called Santo Dame. And by syncretic, that means that it has sort of a combination of Christianity and native rituals. And the main thing that Santo Dame does is that they drink a tea brewed from two Amazonian plants, a vine and a shrub. And when combined, those plants release DMT, which is a high-potency hallucinogen, which makes you see bright lights and colors, and in the case of the members of this church, also apparently makes you see Jesus. So there are about 40 members of this church in Portland, about 120 in the state of Oregon, and Oregon is the only state that has ruled via the U.S. District Court that oversees Oregon's jurisdiction that the use of this tea called ayahuasca is legal for religious freedom reasons. So at any rate, what this story talks about is that whole history, and then the sort of extra, you know, twist in the tail that the church has admitted to giving small doses of their hallucinogenic tea to children as young as the age of 10.
So now, did this come about when you said that Oregon ruled that it was legal? I assume whenever there's a court ruling, that's because there was either a lawsuit or an arrest. So how did it come to be? I mean, was there a conflict about this at some point? Did somebody sue somebody, or did the state try to arrest somebody?
The church leaders actually sued the federal government. They sued the Justice Department for the right to do it in 2008. There was an arrest back in 1999 of a church leader named Jonathan Goldman, who was found, I believe, importing something like 40 bottles of this tea from Brazil into the U.S. and he was arrested and his tea was confiscated. But that was back in 1999, so there hadn't been any arrests for illegal use of ayahuasca for a good decade, but they sued anyway.
Now, is it a kind of thing that's damaging? Like, does it have long-term side effects?
Oh, that depends on who you ask. honestly, the Brazilian government did a study in the 80s and declared that less than 1% of the people who used ayahuasca tea or drank ayahuasca tea had psychotic episodes. So, you know, depending on how you look at it, those are good numbers.
Well, it's safer than Ritalin. Is it the sort of thing that's legal just for anybody? Like, could Dawn? I mean, not that she would do this sort of thing, but could Dawn just go buy it and brew some up?
No.
So it's only for religious reasons.
She would have to join the church, and they have a fairly rigorous screening process.
Because you always hear people talk about, you know, that this is the way that they.
I mean, in all fairness, like I got to be careful how I say that. Like, they have what they describe as a fairly rigorous screening process.
I don't know
whether or not having 10 hippie type folks stare at you for a while into your soul is a rigorous screening process or not. But they do check that your you know psychological history and check to see if you're on any SSRIs. Because if those drugs actually will conflict with ayahuasca, it might kill you.
This is weird because this is like the faith healing thing, I guess, which doesn't really heal that often, apparently. But where it just seems, I mean, I'm all for Oregon being progressive and whatever, but it does seem like if we've all sort of agreed on one thing, it's like the government steps in when your parents, you know, not that I'm referring to these people as crazy, but in some abstract scenario where the parents are just nuts and they're doing something that, you know, theoretically, you would want a choice in because it might be dangerous that the state sort of says, like, hold on now, and they make the decision for you. Is it strange in everybody? Does everybody think it's strange that it's legal? Or is it sort of, I mean, in other words, is the state of Oregon seeing this are they seeing some truth that the other states just don't see? Are we being rational or are we the nutty exception?
Well, I'll tell you, I think it's a little strange that the state hasn't stepped in when it comes to the use of this with children. The state itself, honestly, I don't think that the state government or local government was terribly aware this was happening. And it is pretty rare. We've only been able to establish that in three separate instances this was served to children. So it's not like this is, you know, out in the streets they are serving hallucinogenic tea to all the kids. So it's not like that.
Yeah, it seems like serving hallucinogenic tea to kids, that's really the opposite of, I mean, that's not going to have a calming effect. I mean, it's not really like you're giving them big bowls of kava. You're serving hallucinogenic tea, that's going to be like the worst nap session ever. It's just going to be nothing but just cleaning, just cleaning poo off of walls, I would think. So,
you know, I got to tell you, it's got to be like the worst Sunday school of all time.
And it's got to be bizarre.
Like, animal crackers at 3, hallucinogens at 4.
Well, at least you hope they go in that order. If it goes in the other order, it's going to be a very unruly animal cracker session indeed. Good God Almighty. All right. So the new issue is on stand right now. You can read it online or in print. Well, I'm a weekend online at wweek.com. That is wweek.com. Let me just ask you a question, and you can be honest. Have you just decided that you don't wish to be in the same room as Don and I ever again? Do we offend? Do we have body odor? Do we have a funk? Is there a furious fetid stench coming out of the room and you just don't want to tell us about it?
Rick, I love the both of you, and I look forward to seeing you again in person soon. The trouble is that you do have an office that's on the exact opposite side of town from mine.
Well, you know, I'm just saying, you know, if love enters into it, I mean, if it really is such a strong magnetism, I'm just saying that, you know, we meet you halfway. You know, we could just do the, you know, we just do the show.
In the middle of the Ross Island Bridge.
I was going to say, just do the show, you know, maybe on a skiff floating down the river while seeking adventure.
Ooh.
I think that kind of romance, that sort of gondola-esque atmosphere that you're describing is exactly the kind of thing that will get me away from the porn and toward a personal relationship.
Awesome. Read him in print in Willamette Week or online at wweek.com. Mr. Aaron Mesh, thank you, my friend.
Thank you so much, Rick.
There you go, Aaron Mesh. We should totally do that. We should completely get a skiff. I don't even know what that is. I think it's a plank or something. Yeah. And then just do the show from the middle of the river. That's a great idea.
Let's wait till it gets warmer.
Oh, whatever. Fine. You're going to live a life of joyless safety. So apparently, yes, Casey Jordan is from the PDX, and she is an adult film actress from Portland. So that makes two different contemporary porn stars that are from here. So there's this chick. And see, I thought it was Gianna Michaels, who you have actually seen, whether you know it or not, because she is the girl she's the parasailer in Piranha 3D.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Where she's like into the water and there's the whole bosom cam and then her legs get chewed off.
Oh, and she's from here. I don't think I realized that.
But I don't think so. See, I thought she was. Oh. But the guy who told me that, he's like, hey, and that chick, she's totally from here. She's from, you know, she's from Salem. I don't believe it's Gianna Michaels. I believe it is, here's a terrible porn name for you. And not even just because it's like a bad pun or something. Just because it was clearly like, this is clearly just like somebody who was drunk while watching HBO on a Sunday night. Her name is Carmela Bing.
Yeah, that
Let
is
you
bad
work
name.
That out for a second. Yeah. So now apparently it is not the other girl. It's this girl, Carmela. What's her name? Carmela Bing. So she, I guess, is from Salem. I guess she went to Salem High. And I'm not saying it's not true, but it seems, here's the thing about that. There's a lot of porn on the internet. A lot of guys in the world. A lot of guys watching a lot of porn. Mm-hmm. Ergo, it seems like somebody would have just said, like, hey, I went to school with her. Here's your picture. Because that would be sort of interesting. You know, somebody says, like, hey, there's that porn star that, you know, is, you know, Cherry Surprise or whatever. Here she is when her name was Sandra. And they just show you, like, the picture, you know, from the high school yearbook. And yet, nothing. So, I mean, it's not like I spent all that much time looking for it. Because let's be honest, if you start searching for Carmela Bing things online, the yearbook, you're not going to see. Even if the yearbook is out there, that's like needle and haystack. And the haystack is boobs. It's like a murder of crows. It's a haystack of boobs.
A haystack of boobs.
Look over there. It's what? Don Taylor. Oh, the sound failed me. Look over there. We go.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Immediately. Gianna Michaels from Seattle. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
So you knew someone would know. Tennessee drivers may soon have to start strapping their pets into a seatbelt while driving. Under a bill sponsored by Representative Jim Cobb, dogs or other animals must be restrained while in the interior of a motor vehicle in motion. According to the Spring City Republican, which is a newspaper, I believe, not only can it be distracting for drivers to have a pet roaming around a vehicle, it could be potentially dangerous for them. Jesse Medina, general manager of a Petco store in Bellevue, Tennessee, told Nashville's News 2 that there are already plenty of products available. She said, pet parents underestimate the fact that these harnesses are going to save their dog's life.
Is Nashville News 2 where it takes place in a mall?
Yes.
Okay.
But it's no different within their child or an adult who gets into an accident.
By the way, I do like the fact that they use the term pet parents, because Laura and I say that occasionally, or pet people, but sometimes pet parents.
Pet parents.
And we do not refer to the dogs as our children, because that to me is like, that, see, that's the pet parent, pet people thing, like I can do that. Referring to your dogs as your children is just, that is where you become like an actual crazy pet person. So I don't do that.
Yeah, we never refer to our pets as our children, but... occasionally, one of us will tell the dog to, like, you know, go talk to the other. Like, Patrick will go talk to your mother about that. Get your mother to feed you or something.
Yeah.
But you know,
now we do the
brother. Do it kind of ironically.
We do the thing of referring to Max and Philo as brothers, you know, like, you know, get off your brother, you know, or whatever. So, you know, but in a sort of in a Chip and Ernie kind of a way.
By the way, I guess it's probably a good idea. I know they do have different kinds of straps. Like, you can, there's a sort of a harness contraption that connects clips your dog's collar to a seatbelt, to an existing seatbelt in your car.
That's a good idea.
Which is a good idea, because dogs can be seriously injured just being thrown around in case of an
accident. Well, and plus then they just jump onto your lap. That's how Stephen King got hit.
Yeah.
It's that guy's Rottweiler was like rooting around looking for some ham or something. And he was, you know, and then the Rottweiler was like, you know, going after his sleeve. And so that's why he got pasted.
Yeah. My husband, who is a man who... reserves pretty much all of his rage for when he is driving around, and generally it's at the expense of his judgments of other people. He is enraged by people he sees driving around with their dogs in their laps.
Yeah, the dogs in the back of the truck, that's a thing that kind of annoys me.
Yeah, the dog that is not tethered to anything in the back of a truck really bothers me. But Patrick just gets enraged when he sees someone driving with a dog in their lap, because it's dangerous for the dog. It's dangerous for the people that are driving. But yeah, but he'll just go crazy.
Now if the dog isn't tethered down, in other words, if the dog isn't sort of like restrained, then where? So it seems like of your different options where the dog could be, it seems like maybe the lap is better as opposed to just roaming the cabin somewhere.
I guess, but I mean, you know, there just seems to be something about it that just seems really dangerous and really wrong. That, like, you've got an entire car, you've got the back seat, you've got the passenger seat, and your damn, you know, Yorkie is in your lap, and then sticking, and then like halfway out the window of the car, and the guy's like steering around the dog, and it's just, come on, just make the dog go get in the passenger seat.
Max runs the house. I can't really make him do anything. It's not a democracy.
Do you let Max in your lap while you're driving?
Let is sort of an elastic term, I think, for what happens there. No, Max does the thing of, like, he will sleep. Actually, what I've found out, though, is that the way to get him to sort of just, you know, the way to just keep him from asserting his dominance is to turn on the seat warmer. If I just turn on the ass warmer, then he's like, oh, this is, oh, I'm so evil, but I'm tired. You know, but it, here's the thing. It's not when he's just driving, or when he's driving. There's a little Freudian slip.
when he's
taking me out for the day. it's not just when we're driving around. It is almost always, and I think this is a reaction to just having jangled nerves. It is when I pick him up from having his hair cut. If I pick him up having his hair cut, it's like I put him down, I'm like, lay down, stay. And to his credit, he's really, really good about following instructions. You know, lay down, stay, you know, whatever. He does all of that really, really well, except when he comes back from having his hair cut. And then it's like I do the thing of, like, putting him in the passenger seat, because I do the thing of, you know, putting him there and I make him lay down and I make him stay. And then he's good. Once I can get him to lay down in the seat, he's actually good for the trip home, unless I'm picking him up from, like, the groomery or whatever, when I'm like, get in, lay down, stay. And then it's like we'll be in the car about 5 seconds and he just goes, and he just leaps like a pole vaulter and just lands in my lap. And then it's, you know, and then the reason he stays there is because it's actually going to be more difficult, because then I'm the Stephen King guy otherwise of having to, like, wrangle the dog while I'm driving. So then, and it's like he just curls up and falls asleep. And then what I feel like is, I feel like I'm in that idiot Warner Brothers cartoon where there's this little cat that goes to sleep on the back of the bulldog, where he goes like, where he like needs the, you know, and then he goes to sleep. And then I'm, you know, and so I don't run my home in any way. There's no way in which I'm in charge. Here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our Geek Watch.
Here's your Geek Watch for Wednesday on the Rick Emerson Radio program.
This high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember, you used to...
Just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but... Because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen on
there. There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
At an invite-only event in San Francisco today, Apple took the wraps off the iPad 2. Apple CEO Steve Jobs, who's taking a leave of absence from the company, returned to unveil the new product, which is expected to be something of a hot seller. As anticipated, the new tablet has two cameras and is faster with dual-core processors, which just about doubles CPU performance and makes the graphics speed 9 times faster, while using the same power as the processor from the first iPad.
See, that just pisses me off. That's a thing that just irritates me. They're just doing more with the same crap that they already have in the, you know, in the. That's just where he's just screwing with you.
Yeah, why didn't you just do that the first time?
He's basically just whizzing on you right there, going, yeah, look at this. It's all the same stuff that's in yours, but you can't do any of this in your face. Yeah.
It's also much thinner.
Yeah.
It went from 13.4 millimeter to 8.8 millimeter in thickness on the new one. And it works not only on AT&T's 3G network, but also on Verizon's wireless 3G network. The device is 9.5 inches high by 7.3 inches wide. It weighs just 1.33 pounds. It comes with in three storage sizes for Wi-Fi and Wi-Fi plus 3G models. You can get a 16 gigabyte, 32 gigabyte, or 64 gigabyte. And the rear camera is 720p, and the front one is VGA quality, suitable for video and still photography.
See, can I just admit something? I have no idea what that means. When they talk about, you know, 3 million megapixels, no one knows. No one cares. No one can tell the difference between 3 million and 4 million megapixels. There's no one.
Well, it is the number of pixels per square inch.
I understand that, but I'm saying you can't tell the difference.
It's like thread count on sheets.
I know what it is. I'm not asking what it means. I'm saying no one can really tell the difference.
Well, you can tell the difference, though, if you're taking pictures that you're going to edit later. If you're going to be pulling them into like Photoshop and you want to, like, you know, make.
I think if you're an actual professional photographer, you can tell the difference. But if you're an actual professional photographer, you use something else. I'm not complaining. I'm just, look, I own one. I'm just saying that, you know what it is? Lots of people who tell you that I can hear the difference between an MP3 that's encoded at 256K bitrate and a 320. You can't. It's like the same Jagoff that wants to tell you about the monster cable he's got for his stereo system at home. You can't tell any difference. No one can. Apple themselves, by the way, I think de facto admit this by saying that the Retina display has more pixels than your eye can register.
Yeah. It is, yeah.
It's like telling me the record contains great songs I can't hear.
Well, I agree with that about the Retina display. I mean, granted, just looking at the display on my iPhone versus yours. Yours is...
That's right, Don.
It is just gorgeous. It is much... Mine is good. Yours is terrific. So, you know, you can see the difference side by side.
But that's not the camera,
But
though.
The thing with the camera is really you just want high pixel density for if you're going to be blowing pictures up later. My first phone had a camera in it. It was horrible. It was terrible. There was nothing you could do with those photos. They weren't even going to be good enough quality to like load up to a website. In this case, you can actually take pictures that are good enough quality that you can blow them up to a decent size and print them out.
See, I think
and have actual printable photographs.
That is true. It's just, I mean, again, I'm not really. This is such a first world problem we're talking about. You know, the intricacies of whether or not you want 4 million megapixels. Some guy eating dirt clods, in Scotland. The thing about that is that I think on the one hand, see, it's interesting because there now is no middle ground. On the one hand, you are either like a professional, like I think Jason Crump actually is. I forget if it's an iPhone or an Android or whatever, but he's a professional photographer, and yet occasionally he will actually just use like whatever his smartphone is because he's like, well, it's got a 9 jillion mega something, whatever. And he'll do because it then allows for him to take it home, blow it up, alter it in Photoshop. And yet on the other hand, all of the other photos people are taking with it, and they just have this perfect crystal clarity, and it's like, you know, it's just every single nuance and detail. And then they're just like squashing it down and compressing it like nobody's business and sticking it on YouTube or something or on, you know, on Facebook where it's just being rendered it like such a compressed way that you can't even. It's like somebody who it's like somebody who buys the White Album and then just listens to it like, you know, like it's, you know, like on tiny, like tinny little headphones. And it is compressed all to hell at like 32K in mono or something. And they go, no, it's I can hear all that. Whereas you really can't hear anything. So it does become, this is the wankiest conversation.
It is.
My final thing about this is, though, just if nothing else, just to stop the flood of tech emails that are probably coming in right now. Here's what I think everybody who owns an iPhone, I can't speak for Android-based phones. Here's what everybody who owns an iPhone would settle for in exchange. Rather than giving us like a second or a ninth camera or like, you know, something that's 9 billion megapixels, Why don't you make a flash that doesn't turn everybody's eyes white? Huh? How about that? Why don't you do that? Or maybe just a button that fixes it. And here's why you could make a button that fixes it. Because it happens the same way on everybody's goddamn phone. You know exactly what that problem looks like. Here's the other reason you know that Apple, and I love Apple, but let's be honest here. Let's call a spade a spade. Here's how you know that Apple could fix that whole thing of, because every time a listener comes here and I take the photo with my iPhone, I then have to go home and I have to, in like Photoshop, I have to blow it up and I have to color, like, because you look like a freaking zombie in all of the photographs, because I managed to sort of avert my eyes or like squint at the right moment. But you, of course, are normal until you're making eye contact and smiling and your eyes are open wide. And so it's just like these portals of doom in the middle of your face.
Maybe my eyes just look like that.
Your eyes don't look like they have white dwarfs inside of them. If they do, you know, you shouldn't be driving, because really, you just look, you know, you look all cataract up. And so I have to open it in Photoshop and take out the white eye that everybody has. Here's how you know that Apple could solve that problem automatically. There's a goddamn preset in Photoshop and in certain Apple applications lets you take the red out of the eyes by pushing a button. So it's not like they lack the technology to do it. They'll just do that on like the iPad like 12 or something that I then have to buy.
Well, it's interesting. There are some of the upgrades on this are interesting. I mean, they do have an HDMI video out option on this now, so you can port video out of the device onto, like, say, you know, your big television if you have a big HDTV. Steve Jobs said this was actually a big request from teachers, so that they could bring things into, I guess, school on their iPads and then show them in class. That costs $39. There's an accessory also called Smart Covers, which is the new case is a bendable flap that sticks onto the side of the device. It wakes up the iPad from sleep when you open it and puts it to sleep when you close it.
To be fair, BlackBerry has had that for a while. The BlackBerry case does that.
They're also going to be giving you iPhone and GarageBand apps available for, which have been available for Macs but are now going to be available for the iPad as well, the iMovie app. The thing is, I'm reading all of this stuff, though, and I'm still not seeing anything about a USB port.
Well, because his whole point is going to be that you just everybody has Wi-Fi and everybody's on a network. That's the thing. So, and, you know, and I do believe there are, and I don't know this for sure, but I do believe that there are wireless USB hubs you can take with you to where, in other words, it's just like a little thing you just carry in your pocket. And it is actually it's got multiple USB inputs, and it's just the connection between that and the iPad is wireless. So it would be like sitting down with your iPad, and you put a it'd be like putting a coaster on the table, except the coaster has multiple USB ports.
Okay.
And so it actually does that. It basically just leaps wirelessly from the iPad to the thing, and then the whatever. So.
Well, anyway, it's going to be available March 11th, and will cost $499. The original iPad is now $399 for the 16-gigabyte Wi-Fi only version. So, and then the 3G version of the 16-gigabyte iPad is $529.
Let me show you this. Here's a pain that only Apple users have to deal with. There's nobody who buys like a Dell ever has to worry about that. And I would argue even people who buy Android-based phones don't have to deal with this particular pain, which is the magical Jedi-like ability of Apple to make you feel like an absolute loser for owning something that you would have been the greatest man on earth for owning about 9 months ago. Where you're just like, this is the greatest device I have ever. And then you fast forward, I have the suck source, you know, and it's just like you've just got the, you know, and it's like you want to go home and just use it to wedge open a door somewhere.
Yeah. And I'm thrilled. I was thrilled to be able to buy the 3GS iPhone for $99. I really was. You know, great. That does not stop me, however, from like looking with lust at the iPhone 4 and then thinking to myself, maybe I will like save up $500 and buy the next iPhone when it comes out. And I'm like, but really I don't need, I really like my phone. But they do have that way of making you go, that other thing, that's not good enough.
Well, that's the thing. You'll be fine as long as you never like use anybody's iPhone 4 for like a day. Because that's the problem. I mean, it's like, you know, that is the way to get, you know, Sarah and Greg just switched to, and I'm not trying to start a whole flame war, so everybody just put your pants back on. But, you know, Sarah and Greg had been BlackBerry. We had all been on BlackBerry users because CBS only supported BlackBerry. And so you had to have a BlackBerry. If you wanted a smartphone at CBS, you had to have a BlackBerry because their infrastructure wouldn't support anything else. So, but we have all eventually just said, like, well, you know, I think we're going to look elsewhere, and then, you know, just moved away from BlackBerry because, you know, it just was not doing what we wanted it to do. And the BlackBerry, like the touch BlackBerrys, just are lame. So they got Android, I think, like Incredibles or something. And this is my disclaimer before everybody thinks that I'm hating. They're really happy with them. They love their Android Incredibles. You know, my wife's got a similar phone, which she loves. I'm not saying they're unhappy. They think those phones are awesome. Bruce Agler, who, for the record, does not even own an iPhone. He and I were talking about that, and I said, oh, yeah, Sarah and Greg got smartphones. He goes, oh, what do they got? And I said, oh, they got Android Incredibles. And, well, do they like them? And I said, yeah, they're really, you know, they like those. And he goes, oh, it's just because they haven't used an iPhone. And then he doesn't even own one. And he just sort of went back to it. But that's the way that you can sell stuff from Apple. It's just say, like, I'll just give it to you for like a day and then I'll come back tomorrow. And it's like, you know, and you'll come back. You have to pry it out of their hands.
Well, I have to admit, I do need to replace my laptop. And I am looking at the iPad and thinking about it partly because it's lighter, because it does most of the things that I need an actual laptop to do, but also because I already have an AT&T account that I am paying for, and I honestly, I'm gonna look and see what the price differential is of increasing my data plan with AT&T, and then just dumping my Wi-Fi at home entirely and just using the AT&T data plan. I think it might end up actually being cheaper to just use their satellite Wi-Fi stuff and then get rid of Comcast.
Now, but if that was going to replace your laptop, like, what would you do writing on? Because you can't do, like, long-term writing on that thing. Like, you're not going to write a novel on an iPad.
There are keyboards.
That's the thing. Then you're going to have to buy, like – see, then they're going to screw you on the accessories. That's the thing. They'll totally – Apple is totally – that. Like, when they say that it's $499, and, I mean, it is like
– Oh, yeah. I'd end up spending another $80 to $100 for a keyboard.
And, yes, I mean, I am no – I am no different. I am exactly the same. I mean, I just get horked, like, all the time by companies like that. So, I mean, TiVo did that to me.
But there's a really nice – the iPad does have a really nice little recharging station thing that you prop it up in.
Yeah.
And then it has the keyboard on it.
Yeah, you can actually do that. So that's one of those things that I will probably wait another two evolutions or so like I did with the iPhone. I mean, I'll wait just because it's not like Apple stuff sucks the first generation. It's not like Microsoft products, which are just terrible. I mean, the first three versions of anything from Microsoft, it's just like – it's just a pox. So you don't ever want that. I don't think Apple's like that, but it does become that – sort of a Moore's Law kind of a thing where it's like the leap forward, you know, like 2 years in the future is not just 2 years in the future. Like in computing time, that's like 15 years in the future. Yeah. And so what I will do, though, between now and then is I will just not use one or allow myself to see one or see anybody else operating one, because then I won't need it. Same reason if somebody has an HD TV, I watch TV somewhere else because I don't want to – because my TV at home looks fine because I don't compare it to anything. So that is that is all you know and all you need know. Is that the end of the Geek Watch there?
Yeah.
All right, there's your, what's it? Geek Watch.
By Grabthar's hammer, by the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next. Ooh, loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
Let's do one more here, then we'll take a break.
Okay. Robert F. Kennedy's killer, Sirhan Sirhan's lawyer, says that Sirhan was hypnotized when he shot Robert F. Kennedy in 1968 and that he didn't act alone. There's no question that he was hypno-programmed, said his lawyer, William Pepper, who will unveil the new evidence at Sirhan's parole board hearing on Wednesday. He was set up. He was used. He was manipulated, he said. Despite being hypno-programmed, Sirhan, who was convicted of the crime in 1969, did not actually perpetuate the killing, Pepper claims.
Perpetuate?
Yeah. I think they mean perpetrate.
Perpetrate.
Yeah. Maybe they did say perpetrate. I'd read it wrong. 10 independent witnesses say Sirhan was always in front of Bobby, never behind him, Pepper told ABC. But the autopsy says Bobby was shot at close range, from behind the right ear. This suggests a second gunman, according to Pepper. After the shooting, Sirhan's memories were erased, he says. Parole officials have said the hearings are not generally the place to bring up new evidence.
Who is this guy?
He's Sirhan's lawyer.
What a thankless job that must be. I mean, no wonder he's trying to make it a little fun for himself. This is this is lawyering for lulls, is what this is.
Yeah, and the parole people are saying, we don't hear new evidence at parole hearing. We accept as fact the guilty verdict. So basically our purpose is to determine if or when the inmate can return to society.
By the way, this is, you know what this lawyer's doing? This is like when you're driving in the car and you play like a sort of like backseat car bingo, or you're just or you're doing the, you know, you're like a slug bug or something, because otherwise it's just sitting in a, you know, otherwise it's just sitting in a moving chair for 10 hours and looking at the same view. That's what this is when you're a lawyer. Like, no, it's a mind-erasing conspiracy. Like, just to sort of, you know, just to make it fun for yourself.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're just defending like a crazy guilty guy.
I do like the term hypno-programmed, though. That has a snappy sound to it.
Well, you got into the story. All I could see was like the looming evil visage of Angela Lansbury, and then, you know,
then it all
went black. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. Still to come today, we got your clue number three for this week's Name That Snack contest from our good friends at EH Vending. We've also got, we've done the Geek Watch. We have a penis watch, yes?
Yeah.
All right, awesome. Penis watch. By the way, speaking of penises, apparently Gianna Michaels, so she's from Seattle. Carmela Bing, yes, from Salem. And this guy says, I too have looked online for many, many months for Carmela Bing's high school photo. That's an inside thought, sir, or perhaps an only on the screen where I can see it thought. That's a thing. You don't want to strike that, you don't want to bring up, to strike conversations with it predicated on that statement. Let's see what else we have. We have the top five coming up as well, top five songs used by me, Rick Emerson, to obtain show mode. Before we do any of that, though, we want to take a moment to wish a very happy birthday to Adrian. And you may not know Adrian, but you know Cheryl Kanako, who's our chief of staff. And Adrian is her mother, who I think you met at Christmas Mountain Trees.
I did.
She really is fantastic.
Lovely, lovely woman.
She is like best mom ever. She is. So Adrian is so... Adrian and Cheryl, they are the participants in that story I told you, where occasionally, because they're both fans of The Wire, Cheryl will just, at their home, like on the outskirts of Beaverton, will just yell, 5-0! And then her mom will go, shut it down! And then they just, go back to making like salad or whatever it was they were doing. So she's awesome. So a happy birthday from all of us to Cheryl Kanakoa's mother, Adrian. It's the Rick Emerson Show, so we'll play a little... And by the way, this is how you know she's awesome, because she's like, well, my mom's birthday. I was like, well, we're talking about playing a song or something for her. Yeah. And I said, well, what sort of song do you think? What sort of song do you think your mother might enjoy? Perhaps tying a ribbon around the old oak tree or something. Cheryl responded that anything by Social Distortion or the Ramones would be fine, because her mother was an enthusiast of both bands.
Oh, good.
So happy birthday from everybody here at the Rick Emerson radio program. We'll return after this. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Show. It is Wednesday, March 2nd.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Blue, phone
garden. Gotta watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon. Walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, he's gonna save your soul. You gotta keep a devil way down in a hole. He's got the fire and the fury.
News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson radio program. You know what's really fascinating? At some point, I'll bring in my Double D Light CD collection of just all of the. Lenny.
I thought we were back talking about porn again. I was like, really?
It's a little awkward. But it's the two-disc collection of all of Lenny D's greatest hits. Because I got a whole bunch of his... I don't have all of his things on vinyl, but I got like 9 or 10 vinyl albums. But then it's all been improbably enough remastered, because apparently they just figured there was a big enough market for it. But it's got fantastic liner notes, because it's just got this extensive interview with him, who I think at the time, because he just died a couple of years ago, and at the time they put out this double disc set, it's called Double D-Lite, which was like the name of all of his, you know, his albums were all like D-licious and, you know, D, you know, it was all like a whole Cole Porter thing.
D-mented.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he was running, he had actually owned like a chain of restaurants, a chain of hot spots and nightclubs down by... is it the Panhandle? Is that Florida?
Yeah, that would be Texas.
Okay, well, it was like on the, you know, Florida and surrounding states or whatever. But, and I know that there aren't states that surround Florida, but you know what I mean. And there was like one left because he'd had to close the others because he said, well, you know, my fans, they don't drink as much as they used to. And then he just sort of chuckled and let it trail off with that. But they interviewed him right as he was getting ready to go on stage and perform a hopping set of the keyboard delights for the people that were going to come out to Lenny D's Fun Spot or whatever. So it was just, and he just seemed like the greatest guy. He seemed like a guy that, he's exactly the guy who would have been providing the soundtrack to large sections of the American experience as we see it depicted on television. Not at a Trader Vic's, maybe, but in a more contemporary middle American kind of way. So anyway, I'm a huge fan of Lenny D's, what I'm saying. That's really my point. Yeah. Awesome. And so Lenny D, of course, provides the soundtrack to this, a moment where we talk to you about Squires Electric. They're one of the proud business partners that help you keep the Rick Emerson radio program on the air and filling your head full of wisdom, science, nougat, courage, and a collection of small Fabergé eggs with pictures of Holly Hobby on the front. You can find out more about Squires Electric by going to squireselectric.com. That is squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. That is your phone number, 503-252-1609. 1609. You say, well, you know, I'm not going to be opening a business, and, you know, I haven't damaged the house. We're just moving into the house next week. I haven't even had a chance to burn it down. What would I need to have them? Here's the thing. I'm not saying the guy who's selling you the house is a weasel. I mean, he probably isn't. But, I mean, it's probably good enough for you and the safety of your family. I don't think so. So if a guy is selling you, here's the thing. You don't want to be sold, and I don't really know what this phrase is. I mean, I know what it is, what it means. I don't know literally where it comes from. The idea that you're sold a bill of goods. Does that mean that you're just you're sold the bill of goods, but there's nothing in the box? Is that what that means? The box itself is empty. All you have is the list of things presumably in the box.
I don't know.
I actually think about that phrase sometimes. The sold a bill of goods, and I don't know what it means unless you've been sold an empty container. And so it says, well, you know, inside this container are the following, and then there really isn't. It's just a whole lot of nothing. A big,
I would imagine that must be what it means. Another version of pig in a poke.
Do you know what a pig in a poke means?
Yes.
To buy a pig in a poke?
That.
Do you know from whence it derives?
That derives from, yes. That you would buy, that pigs would be put in sacks to be purchased, and then you would buy the pig, but you would not look in the bag, and then you would look in the bag and it would be like cats.
That's
or something
exactly
in it.
And so my question is, who doesn't look inside the meowing bag to see what's up with it?
Yeah, always look inside the poke.
Yeah,
because it might not be a pig.
I'm just saying, you know, I mean, unless your understanding of pigs is different from mine, it seems like they don't make a lot of cat-like noises.
I have this book at home that is just nothing but where phrases come from.
Is it by Charles Panatti?
I'm not sure who wrote it.
Okay.
But it's one of those things that I used to have it like sitting in my bathroom, and it would just be one of those things that, like, you know, I would just pick up at various times. I'd go in and brush my teeth, and I'd pick it up.
At various times.
Well, sometimes during toilet times. Other times I just
toilet times.
I'd be in the bathroom brushing my teeth or something. I go ooh, and I thumb through it.
Worst children's show ever.
Toilet times.
That would be the name of your concept album, Toilet Times. Here's the thing about toilets and times and things and Charles Panatti and his Parade of Fads, Follies, and Manias, which is a book not unlike that. He's actually written a whole... And he's one of those guys that's been put out of business by the internet, I think. Because, you know, you can just look something up now and go, pig in a poke. Oh, cat in a bag. Which, by the way, is where the phrase, let the cat out of the bag.
Right.
That's where that comes from. But because here's the thing. It's like you got to dose them with something or else they're gonna blow the whole thing.
Yeah.
They're gonna rat you out.
And also, it just doesn't really make sense because even if you had multiple cats, it's still not going to approximate the shape of a pig.
Also, a guy's going to come back and beat your ass.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. You said it was a pig. It's a cat. I'm going to go after you with a claw hammer. I mean, so that ends poorly. Here's the thing about reading in the bathroom, which is a proud American tradition, dare I say a human tradition. And, you know, and of course, in my house, like in many American homes, it was Reader's Digest. We didn't have the National Geographic, but we had the Reader's Digest, which people snark about, but I quite liked the Reader's Digest. I have a soft spot for Reader's Digest even now.
We actually did not have reading material in our bathrooms
really?
When I was growing up, by the way. It was another one of those things like eating casseroles that my mother decided was tacky. And so, therefore, was to be avoided at all costs.
It is kind of tacky, but at the same time, it's like sometimes things that are tacky, it's like the return on the investment is still sufficient that you endure the tackiness because the payoff is great. In other words, it might be kind of tacky, but I mean, when you're just sitting there and you're just going, well,
yeah,
I wish I had something to read. I mean, the Reader's Digest, it makes it all worthwhile. The thing about bathroom material, you know what's great but which I can't bring myself to own are those Uncle John's bathroom readers?
No.
Because the thing is, they're fantastic books. They really are great.
They might be, but it has the word bathroom right on the cover.
And on the front is like a picture of a guy with like his pants around his ankles.
Yeah, no.
So you can't. So not unlike, I have said for the longest time that, it, less of an issue now, but the Playboy should have put out the same magazine minus nudity under a different name. to just get the rest of the year. Because Playboy is a great magazine that a lot of people will never know about or never read because it's Playboy and there's naked ladies inside. So they should have de-sexed it, took out all the nudity and the whatever, put it and just called it, you know, like Insights and just sold it. And they would have made a mint on that. I mean, So they ought to do the same thing with the Uncle John, put it under a different name, because I'd buy those books if they didn't have like a toilet roll, you know, on the front. It was just, you can't, what is that about?
That's why I miss Udney Reader. Is Udney Reader still in business? I think they went out of business.
Maybe.
Because they were like...
The Reader's Digest for hippies.
Yeah, it was like Reader's Digest for bleeding heart liberals.
Yeah, no, if you owned the whole Earth catalog, you probably read the Udney Reader.
I used to read Udney Reader. I liked it.
My sister, who was a big bleeding heart hippie, got married in a park, and I swear to God, had like daffodils threaded through her hair. And also, let me just tell you this, best man at their wedding, biker named Hooter.
Nice.
Ponytail. Hadn't shaved in like 9-10 years. Hooter is his name. Dungarees.
He looked like Dr. Teeth.
No, he looked like, I guess this is every hippie. He looked like Jesus. Huh. You know, like they all do. Those people all look alike. They all look like Jesus. Anyway, but you know, so before she became like a creepy born-again Christian, she was a creepy hemp-smelling a hippie. And so, yeah, she got me a subscription to the Udney Reader when I turned like 13 or something, when I became a man. When I reached the age of reason, she felt that I was, you know, I needed to know about the issues of the day. And so she got me a subscription to the Udney Reader, which is like a thing that nobody does. Who does that? Who gets a 13-year-old boy the Udney Reader subscription? I mean, it's just so completely gay and weird. But it ended up being kind of great. I'm glad that she did that. So I'm talking about her like she's dead. Mm. It's a, you know.
When I was 13, I asked my mother for a subscription to Psychology Today.
Really?
Yeah.
So you could self-diagnose?
I knew I was crazy early on, and no one took me seriously. So I became fascinated with the study of psychology, and I started reading psychology textbooks and Psychology Today.
Some of us take you seriously, Don.
Thank you.
Okay. Squires Electric. 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. Proud sponsors of this, the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, coming up at 4 o'clock today, Don Taylor and Bobby Fatboy Roberts will be hosting Ham-Fisted Radio over at Cascadia.fm. That is at Cascadia.fm. What's on the agenda today, Don?
I will undoubtedly be talking to some degree about Rango.
Oh, you should talk about that now
night.
A little bit.
I should.
So you sent me the text message. I mean, interrupt, but I want to make sure we don't forget about that. You sent me a text message. You said it's good, like Pixar good.
Yeah, and I think I would like to do a proper review of it on Friday, where I actually, you know, do an entire structured review. But for now, what I'd like to say, having seen Rango last night, it looked like it would be cute. Looking at the ads, it looked like, oh, it looks like it might not suck. I was unprepared for how very, very good it is.
Now, what is it about in a broad, I mean, in a generalized
sense? Well, to start with, it was written and directed by Gore Verbinski, who directed The Ring and Mouse Hunt, and he did the first few Pirates of the Caribbean movies, which apparently just exhausted him to the point where he just left directing for a while to take a vacation because they almost killed him. But he wrote and directed and produced this, and it's animated by the people at Industrial Light and Magic.
Awesome.
Johnny Depp does the voice of a chameleon who is, he fancies himself something of an actor, and he being a chameleon, I guess, and he's in a terrarium at the very top of the movie. He's in a terrarium, which we soon discover is in the back of a car that almost has an accident and swerves, and the terrarium goes flying out the back of the car and crashes, and now he's in the middle of the desert. And it's a rather insane movie. He meets...
Is it like a road trip for a chameleon?
Well, he meets a spirit guide who, in the farm of an armadillo that has just been run over in the middle of the road, there is almost immediately a Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas reference.
Excellent.
And then he ends up wandering in the desert, comes across a town that is populated, a little desert town that is populated by owls and squirrels and possums and such. And in one way, it is very much your typical sort of Western comedy thing that through happenstance and his own lies, he becomes looked upon as a hero and is made sheriff. But then there's a bunch of stuff going on. The town is all dried up. They need water. It is one of the smartest movies I've seen in a long time.
You're almost doing your proper review now, by the way, if you want to wait.
I will save for the proper review, but I'd say there are references to Chinatown in this movie, to High Noon. Roger Deakins, the cinematographer, is actually credited at the end as a cinematography consultant, which I've never seen.
And he's the Coen brothers guy, right?
Yeah. And I've never seen this on an animated film before. And it is beautiful and it's funny and it's great. And just to give you an example of what you can expect, there is a scene coming towards in the last third of the film where he has sort of a death and resurrection experience, I'm not kidding, where he meets the spirit of the West, who is basically Clint Eastwood. It's a guy with a golf cart who's prospecting in the desert, but he looks like Clint Eastwood, talks like Clint Eastwood, voice done by Timothy Oliphant.
Really?
Yeah. And Rango, the chameleon, asks him, "Is this heaven?" And the spirit of the West says to him, "Son, if this was heaven, we'd be eating Pop-Tarts with Kim Novak."
Fantastic.
That's the kind of movie this is. It's crazy and really smart.
Is there any singing?
And hilarious. No.
Good. All right.
No, there is an amazing soundtrack done by Los Lobos.
Ah.
I'm
sold.
Ned Beatty does a voice. Harry Dean Stanton does a voice. It's amazing. It is an amazing movie, and I will...
This has been Don Taylor's brief...
I will rhapsodize about it more on Friday.
I would love to hear you do so, because it's like animated films are frustrating, because... And I think maybe the reason they're frustrating is the reason that, in other words, the problem and the solution are the same thing. They should be awesome because you can do anything.
Yeah.
But I think the idea that you can do anything reveals, let me put it the other way. I think rather than revealing when people don't have talent, I think the idea that you can do anything reveals people who truly do have talent, because it's knowing what to do and what not to do. And what kind of pop culture references work, and what end up just Shrekerizing your film and just turning it in the crap. When a song and the music is appropriate, and when you should just have when you should inflict some sort of saccharinesque, horrible dance number on the audience to a Tone Loke song, which is like never. And so when you have just a totally blank canvas, I think it does separate the men from the men in terms of figuring out like which, now that everything is open to us, we have every ingredient available to us. We're going to see if we can actually demonstrate that we know which ingredients are proper. Because if you only have like a physical set and physical actors to work with, then by definition, you only got a few different choices. So,
and I'll say Rango actually also, the reason I said it was Pixar good really is that it slides into that really difficult territory where it's really smart and there's a lot of very adult references in it. And by adult, I don't mean racy. I mean, a big hunk of the plot is based on Chinatown, for God's sake. The Ned Beatty character wears a hat just like John Huston. Kids aren't going to get that. But the thing is, the movie itself is plotted and paced and created in such a way that the kids in the audience were loving it, too.
Right.
They didn't have to get those references. It's just like an extra layer of goodness for the grown-ups to enjoy.
Yeah. I mean, and, you don't have to, all the things that people say. You don't have to like Rome. You don't have to know Romeo and Juliet to like West Side Story or, whatever. So, but if you do, then it's sort of an extra layer of awesome. It's like, oh, hey, look at this. So, excellent. Well, we're going to do the top five here in a few. And then around 3:30-ish, if you're listening live, Don Taylor will skedaddle to go to Ham-Fisted Radio with Bobby Fatboy Roberts. You talk about Rango. Anything else on the agenda over there?
I can't really think of anything.
Or is it just Catch-as-Catch-Can?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
I will be going over and nailing my role of Gilbert. Or
Harvey.
Harvey.
Harvey the millionaire.
Harvey, who said, well, I shouldn't read the line on the air. I don't want to give anything away.
No.
I don't give spoilers for the episode. How weird. I mean,
I say, sir, you should go with something like that.
How weird would it be? I mean, not that it's likely to happen, but how weird would it be if I got like another role on Leverage, which is just, again, it's like opening a rift or something. Somebody said I would be like the Jonathan Winters of Leverage, then just appearing like over and over again in different guises.
Now, do you know your backstory of your character? Like,
yes.
What kind of a millionaire you are?
They actually do describe, and I mean, literally, again, it's me, so it's like two lines. I mean, it's not like a meaty part or anything.
Yeah, but it helps to know, like,
but they do
who
give. It's so dumb because, what's my motivation? Is its own cat, but they do actually write down, like, here's who you're talking to. here's how you feel about him and here's why. And again, it's the whole, I mean, this is not a plot point, but there's a guy, he stole my wife or whatever.
Yeah.
And so the guy, but and the guy's being real schmuck, and we see
Are you like tech millionaires as opposed to oil millionaires?
Or? I believe we are, yes, I believe we are contemporary business millionaires in some sort of technological field, because that's, you know, leverage leans real heavy on the tech stuff, because so Rogers can cram in like a lot of geek references. But I think it's that we see each other like at a party or something. And it's like the two adversaries, like across, you know, at high noon, like seeing each other across this, you know, across the, you know, the crowded room from each other. And he says, you know, Harvey. And I say, you know, Ted. And he says, you know, something or other. And, you know, and then I say, very good. How's our wife? You know, or whatever. And I just, you know, in a sort of,
So you're
snarky,
bitter. You're a bitter millionaire.
In an arch fashion. Yes. Mm. So there you go. Harvey, the bitter millionaire.
Okay.
Anywho.
I can see this.
Do we have other like news things? Is there like I haven't even played any of the goddamn Sheen stuff.
No, we have the Sheen stuff and
all
I
right.
have the penis
well,
watch.
I'm not
and...
even going to – we'll just – all right. We're going to call that good. Well, because how can we not, you know
– Yeah.
It would be losing if we didn't if we didn't get to the Sheen things.
You know, and the, and penis stories are evergreen. They can
Seriously.
They can last –
Penises
can,
are yesterday, today, and tomorrow. I'll just – rather than just – look, because here's the thing. This interview is, all told, is 11 – it's like 20 – it's like 32 minutes long,
yeah,
minus commercials. So, I mean, I could easily just play like all of this and it would just be freaking glorious.
And we could just sit here and drink our Vizo and not do any work and people would still be entertained.
I very nearly suggested that we do today as just an, as a, like a director's commentary on the Sheen thing. Which we may revisit at some point as like a bonus broadcast or something. We may do some bonus feature. I'm calling dibs on this now, where we just sit and we just listen to the whole thing with like a shrink and just stop it. And then,
oh, I like that.
And then
yeah,
everybody's drunk. So we may
well,
do that.
Your wife can hook us up with a professional, can't she?
That she can. She's got some hot nursing friends too. Nursing friends who are they're very they understand
big
their field.
Brains.
That's right. That's what
big
I'm talking
giant
about.
Giant brains.
Exactly. But instead, I just flagged, like, I don't know, like four different sound bites, because the whole thing is one big sound bite. Some of this you will have heard and some of this you will have not, but I just seized on a few different things. So let's see. This is, I think this is where they're talking about his drug intake here. And this is Martin Sheen was concerned for his health and he was poo-pooing that because, you know, he can handle it.
Someone that, like, fell out of the sky. No interest in that. I don't care if he's my dad. Back off with your judgment.
But the stakes for Sheen have never been higher.
Tell me about the last time you took drugs.
Last time I took drugs, I probably took more than anybody could survive, you know?
What are we talking about? How much?
I don't know, man. I was banging 7-gram rocks and finishing them because that's how I roll. I have one speed. I have one gear. Go.
How I roll. Go.
One speed.
Here's the thing, incidentally, and I'm going to make this observation when they come in later. You know who Charlie Sheen kind of sounds like? Not obviously in terms of his voice as such, but in terms of his cadence and his diction and his mannerisms when he speaks. I kept trying to find a way that this wasn't true, but it is true. And this won't maybe mean a lot to you, Don. But when he speaks, when you speak, people judge you. When he speaks, his cadence and mannerisms and inflections and the way he just does that sort of like that, go. Right? He sounds a lot like our friend Kelsey, who has appeared here now and again from the bakery where she works.
Okay, yeah, Sarah's friend,
sort of
Kelsey,
a Veronica,
yes.
Of Betty and Veronica looking girl who shows up. Kelsey sounds a lot like this, like frighteningly like this sometimes. Not like for long periods of time, but I'm just saying in the way that she delivers her words, in the way that she actually forms and speaks her sentences, she sounds a lot like Charlie Sheen. And I kept thinking like that's not true. And then it's like I would listen again and it really was true. So
this is where it
just becomes so unbelievably awesome.
I have one speed. I have one gear. Go.
How do you survive that?
Because I'm me.
How great is that?
Oh, God.
I mean, do you see what I mean? It's like it's such a target-rich environment. It's like every 5 seconds God. He's just saying something awesome.
Well, me, I'm different. I just have a different constitution. I have a different brain. I have a different heart. I have a different, you know, I get tiger blood, man.
But does even tiger blood prevent an OD?
And then what kind of idiot response is that for the actual, for the news organization to say for 2020? But does even tiger blood. I mean,
oh,
it's like he has some weird – he has some sort of Jobsian distortion field where, like, everybody just listens to – like, at no point does she just go, like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, there's never a point in the interview where she says, like, that was just gibberish that you said. There's nothing logical in that sentence. Instead –
but then they cut away, so we don't really actually know what she said after that. There could have just been a long, quiet, awkward silence, and then she might have just gone – I'm sorry, Tiger Bud?
It is. What? It's like the most glorious never made Will Ferrell movie at points where, again, it's just a guy, you know, a whale's vagina, and then everybody in the room just is silent.
You don't worry that you're going to die when you take that many drugs?
Dying's for fools. Sure.
When you look back at the last time you used drugs, are you disgusted with yourself? Or do you think, how could I have done that?
I'm proud of what I've created. It was radical.
You're proud of that party moment?
Of course. Why wouldn't I be?
No, Why would you be?
Because I expose people to magic. I expose them to something they're never otherwise going to see in their boring, normal lives.
So how do you get that out of
you? Get out of your system, you close your eyes, and you change your brain. It's not that complicated.
How can anyone believe that you will stay clean, given your track record?
I'm not interested in what people believe. I'm interested in what I believe, and I believe in the truth.
Later, a look inside Sheen's Hollywood home and the two women who now live there.
You're like the new Hugh Hefner here with your
team. He's an amateur.
When 2020...
And so then she brings up the issue of this of his publicist and the story that he had, like, abdominal pains or whatever when he got locked up
last time. A suicide binge.
Casey Jordan, one of two porn stars at the party, said Sheen used a pipe and repeatedly smoked chunks of cocaine.
By the way, this is all worth it for this one line that Sheen gives about describing himself as a client.
Like two to 5 minutes, just hitting it. All I hear was light.
Sheen was later taken away on a stretcher. His then publicist, Stan Rosenfield, said the reason was abdominal pain.
We always get these statements from your publicist, allergic reactions, stomach pains.
Stan's great. Stan's beautiful. He's a beautiful man. And I just want to just hug him and just rub his head. But he can't always get a hold of me.
Making stuff up?
No, he's not making stuff up. He's just trying to cover things. And
you're a tough client.
I'm an exciting client.
True,
I do like that.
They're
like,
spoken.
No, not making stuff up. He's just trying to cover things.
God damn. let's see. So here's a little moment. This is one of the things that my wife seized on as being, you know, and it should be said that, you know, like the guy says later on, nobody really knows if he's, you know, if he's actually bipolar or not. But if one was scanning for symptoms,
yeah.
This is really one of the things where my wife was just like, she's like that. She's like this, just like that. That seals it. Like it shuts it. I said yesterday that he was sort of this insane, that he was like this Brat Pack Howard Beale. But he does have a moment very much like this where he talks about being in touch with a sort of higher.
Making this up, or is this really happening? Tell us.
Sometimes sleep is for infants. I don't sleep.
You don't sleep.
I wait. Sorry.
How do you function if you don't sleep?
I sleep in cars. I sleep on couches. I sleep, you know, when I can. But, you know, when I can't sleep, I don't fight it. I just figure that there's a higher calling and something is keeping me on point that night.
And that higher calling, Sheen says, is hard for people to understand.
They can't process me because it doesn't make sense because I'm not normal and they're normal.
Certainly unconventional, Sheen has his own philosophy of life.
You know, aren't you getting that I'm not interested in the past at all?
It's just part of who you are and, you know, what's led to this place, so.
Yeah, kind of, but that's another paradigm I'd like to smash. Oh, I'm the sum total of all my experiences. BS, man. You're the sum total of what's going on right now.
Next, inside the mansion the public hasn't seen until now.
This is, by the way, is when they asked the girls if they would like to, if they ever thought about marrying Charlie Sheen, and they both just say, like, we'd love to marry Charlie, which... You know, when a lot of blank-faced girls are saying, we want to marry Charlie, normally there's something bad on the horizon. That is, there's...
Yeah, been there before.
Things are afoot.
Sheen now lives with Natalie Kenley, 24, seen here as a marijuana magazine cover girl, and Rachel Oberlin, 24, also known as Bree Olson, a porn star, and one of many Sheen has a shine for.
So, let's party.
We win so radically in our underwear before our first cup of coffee, it's scary. People say it's lonely at the top, but I sure like the view.
So Sheen calls them his goddesses, and their exploits have been fodder for print, TV, and online tabloids around the world.
They're an international sensation. These are my girlfriends. These are the women that I love that have completed the three parts of my heart.
Natty and Charlie have their own special connection. I have my own connection with Charlie, and then Natty and I also have our own relationship.
It seems crazy to everybody else, but for us, I mean, it works well.
It's not about you.
And so this is that moment which I actually didn't notice because I guess maybe I'm not looking for those things, where he kissed the one girl and then Brie Olson was all like pissy.
She just had that, just a quick flash of that look, but of like,
I mean, I could just play the entire thing, but I mean, really, it's just, you know. It would just be us. But really, honestly, I should just take that and just make that like a thing that we loop on the stream like for the next day. You know, just hear the Charlie Sheen interview over and over and over and over again. Oh, God almighty. All right, we should do the E.H. Vending Name That Snack clue for today. Today being Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's clue number three. So once we give out clue number five, which is this coming Friday, if you are the first person to correctly identify the snack in question via snack at rickemerson.com, that is via snack at rickemerson.com, you win a heaping helping of consumable goodness from E.H. Vending. And again, you can find out more about them by going to ehvending.com. That is ehvending.com. Or you can call them if you are in Vancouver. You can call 360-816-1853. That's the phone number for Josh. And if you're in Portland, you can call James at 503-897-8204. That's 503-897-8204. That's how you contact them. So if you are starting up a business, or maybe you are just looking to cut costs a little bit, save a little bit of money, if you feel like you're paying too much for the vending service you got now, or you feel like you're just not getting what you're paying for, the guy is he's uncooperative, he's a jackass, he's whatever, or if you are just if you haven't had a vending service at your business, or you've had something for like, this is something that people do sometimes where it's like they have snacks and they have sodas and whatever, and then it's like they realize that they want to have something that maybe isn't just, you know, filled with sugar and filled with sugar and fat and salt. Not that those aren't an essential part of your daily diet. They are a part of this nutritious meal. Maybe not the entire meal in and of itself. So you can actually get one of those. You can actually get one of those fridges like they have at the back of a deli, or that they have at the back of a convenience store, where it's the glass front fridge where you can actually be stocking it with whatever else you want. People can bring their own food from home if they like, or you can have a coffee service. So if people want caffeine but they don't want to get a soda, you have the coffee service right there with the. All of the creamer, the sugar, and the stirring things. Stirring sticks?
Yes.
Spoon?
Stirring
sticks. Do you remember McDonald's used to have those stirring sticks that had a little M on the end of them?
Oh, do I?
You know, they don't have it.
They're the ones that had a little spoon at the end, and they had to stop using them in the 80s because apparently they were excellent cocaine spoons.
See, I was just going to ask you about that, but you being you, you just left right to the end of the sentence, and you answered my question. So that is a thing that you heard. I don't know if it was actually true, but it was a thing that I certainly heard. They were being used as Coke spoons all the time.
That's what I heard.
Okay.
At the time.
You know, here's a weird thing. I can just like I was there, I can feel exactly what that M, the plastic M on the back of the coffee spoon feels like in my hand. It was that weird bumpy sort of sharp feeling, like it was plastic, molded at like the lowest bitters factory. All right, well, there's that. Also, do you remember this? Never mind. We're getting off track.
What? I want to know now.
Okay, do you remember this? Do you remember when McDonald's, for reasons that I can't really remember, you would go there and they would just give you a pen, and it was like the worst Paper Mate pen on earth, and it would just say McDonald's on it, and you get a pen with your meal?
I don't remember that.
Maybe it's a thing they just did in Washington State or something. It's a terrible bit, and it's like, and it was a thing that nobody really wanted. Like I don't think there's anybody who really demanded a pen, but it was a thing that I think it was with breakfast. You would order your breakfast, and then they would give you a cheap ass Paper Mate pen that said McDonald's on the side.
I do remember the little crappy plastic hand puppets that they would give you, which just...
Oh, it was a plastic bag.
It was just a plastic bag, like, you know, shaped like three lumps, and they'd print, like, Ronald McDonald on it.
And it was that weird, slick kind of plastic.
Yeah.
And then it... But the best part was, I mean, they were basically just giving you a plastic bag that was a toy.
Yeah.
So that was a different time, I think, in America.
Yes.
Okay. Well, in any event... So ehvending.com is where you can find out more about EH Vending. You can call them in Vancouver. It's 360-816-1853 in Portland, 503-897-8204. 503-897-8204. That is how you contact them. And here is today's clue for the EH Vending Name That Snack Contest. Today's clue is... chocolate. There you go. Today's clue is chocolate. If you are the first person to quickly identify this week's snack come Friday, where we give out the final clue, via snack at rickemerson.com, will win a whole bag full of goodness from EH Vending. That is ehvending.com. Hello, Don Taylor.
Hello.
You're chortling.
Oh, yes. I was just looking at the Twitter and watching people just say things like, I don't sleep. I wait.
I mean...
repeating these things on Twitter.
And it's like, and here's the thing about Charlie Sheen is like a lot of times, and this is like a thing, like 70s guys who have overly tight pants and bushy mustaches often they're guys who sort of on the surface appear to be witty, but then it's like you realize they're just saying a bunch of crap they saw in the bumper sticker collection, you know, at Sturgis or something. Yeah. You know, like there was this time in the 80s where it was like every guy I knew thought that it was all styling and smooth to say the whole, like, you know, blah, 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 beautiful body, hold it against me, blah, blah, blah. Because, like, the Bellamy brothers were their roadmap to success with the ladies. And Charlie Sheen is a guy who, if you listen to his delivery, sounds like he's doing a lot of that, except I've never heard anybody say any of that stuff before.
This stuff is all pure Sheen. Pure Sheen.
It is original. I mean, it's like he could get a job just sitting at Hallmark and just, like, spitting that stuff out. It's, I don't sleep, I wait. And got bam, and then you put it on a No Fear t-shirt. And then you can sell that to some jackass bodybuilder for like $75.
Yeah.
You know, I have tiger's blood. Bam, t-shirt. I mean, it's just it's fantastic. So
I'm a Vatican assassin vampire.
God damn. Did he say at one point? I must have missed this. And I've watched this interview 2.5 times now. No pun intended. But I have actually made it almost a third time through this. Did he say it? And we're not going to get to the top five. I'm so aware of this. But did he say it? I apologize to everybody who's waiting for the top five. I didn't really mean to talk us into a corner, but it's Sheen's fault. So we'll do it tomorrow when Anna Griffin, by the way, from The Oregonian, will join us. She'll be in the studio with us and et cetera. Did he say at one point, I drink with my eyeballs?
Yes.
In what context? Not that it makes any difference.
That was another joke. He was with his trainer, and he was drinking some water, and he splashed some water in his face, in his own face, while he was working out.
And then he said, "I drink with my eyeballs." Okay, that explains why Cheryl was the first person to do it, and there've been several people that I just got all these text messages that just said, "I drink with my eyeballs."
Yeah.
And that's the thing where I'm glad that I got a lot of people saying that, because otherwise it would just seem weird, you know, or vaguely threatening in a way that I can't quite quantify. So, all right. Yeah. All right. Ending. I got to stop that.
You want to hear about my great morning?
Yes.
Here's my great morning. First of all, I fooled around with my husband. And again, maybe a little bit too much CMI, but I guess.
Why did you start the story with that?
Well, because this was part of my great morning.
Fooled around.
Well,
it makes it sound like that's like people go, we played a little slap and tickle.
Yeah. But I mean, 11 years together, unexpected morning sex, you know, you kind of like winning.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
Then I was out of coffee and I was sad about that. But then I realized I had a Vizo in the fridge. Started the day with a Vizo, which I don't usually do. And boy, it kickstarts you
in
a way, because the coffee is a slow kind of a caffeination, because, you know, but the Vizo is the equivalent of 3 cups of coffee.
That's right.
So it kind of actually really kicks things into gear. Then drove Patrick to work, was coming. Actually, I was on my way to work, getting in the car, and a sexy neighbor dad was out with his kid.
Oh, is this single dad?
This is single dad,
yes.
At my complex, who I have, like, you know, I keep waffling back and forth about how hot I think he is, because I did start
Didn't something happen the last time, though, and you were never going to talk to him again? Like, he saw you in sweatpants or something?
Well, yeah. I saw him. He's seen me a number of times now at this point when my hair's been just, like, you know, all gumbified and laying, you know, just in weird ways and no makeup on it. Like, oh, God.
Has the septic guy come by?
Yeah. But this morning, I was, like, you know, all dressed and feeling good and on top of things. I had already had the morning sex, so I was, like, you know, feeling on top. And I was all Vizo'd up. So, you know, and I'm putting my stuff in my car, and he goes walking by with the kid. And we did the whole, you know, hey, little nod of the head thing.
Right.
Put my stuff in the car. He's walking away. I look over. He turns around, does the look back over his shoulder as he's going. You know
so,
what I mean?
Sort of a look like a... It wasn't a look just in your general direction. It was a look at you.
Oh, it was a look. Yeah, it was a look at me.
Now, is the look over the shoulder when a guy does it like a look over the shoulder when the girl does it? Because you picture that and it's sort of a, you know, it becomes like a weird, like a Clearasil commercial where she's like, you know, looking back and it's sort of a, hey, you know.
Yeah, but it's the whole thing of, like, you know, the guy walking away to a certain extent, walking far enough away that he thinks he's safe.
I guess that's what I'm saying.
That he won't get caught.
But was it a checking you out or was it looking back to make eye contact with you again?
I think it was a little bit of a check out. It was a little bit of, like, looking back at the lady who was getting in her car.
All right.
He wants a slice of dawn.
Why did you say that? Why did... Was this whole thing just so you could say that?
Maybe, kind of.
All right.
But yeah. So I was, and then I was, then I was in, coming in the car, listening to my Barry Manilow Pandora station, and realized.
You are a sexy woman.
and realize I know all the words to more Bee Gees songs than I would have imagined.
So is this you dreaming about the young man as too much heaven is playing on the?
No, I was really impressed with myself that I apparently remember all of the words to How Deep Is Your Love.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it was an excellent morning all around.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to? Anything else you'd like to share with the room?
Oh, and I had Pop-Tarts.
Okay, was that before or after the morning lovemaking?
That was after that. Well, no, it was during.
I just thought maybe like you know. Well, hold on. I need to. If we're going to do that, I need to carb load.
No, it was when I came in here and I made some coffee and we were beginning our programming day and I had me a couple of brown sugar cinnamon Pop-Tarts with my cup of coffee. And it was just, the whole morning has just been magical.
It was a morning made of win.
It was.
One final thing back on the guy looking at you. Because there's the two different kinds of things. There's the where he's looking back mm-hmm. because he just wants to get like, he wants to be able to scope you out without feeling self-conscious. So he's looking back hoping you have turned around and he can be like assessing the entire, the totality of the package, you know, without you sort of going like, what are you looking at, creep, or, you know, whatever, or come sex me, or whatever it is you're likely to say. But then there's another thing that guys will do where guys will look back at a woman to see if they are looking at us. That's why I asked if he was looking to look at you or if he was looking to look at you, but also to make eye contact. Like, I wonder if that girl's checking me out. And then you turn back to look to see if she is looking at you.
Yeah, it might have been that.
If you had to place bets, you think he was multitasking.
Really, it wasn't an actual checkout because I'll be honest. You know, I mean, again, as I have mentioned before, I am basically built like a sphere. So it's not like, you know, and plus I was like wearing a big coat and I was getting into my car and the car was between me and where he was. So it wasn't like he was checking out to get like a good look at something. It was more like that sort of thing like. You know, I think we did the thing. He looked back for one last look.
What a pleasant interaction that was with that young lady.
Yeah.
I'll have to be out in front of the apartment at this time tomorrow and every day thereafter. He was just reflecting on the moment,
right.
Maybe.
He was.
Well, yeah. All right then.
Although my problem is that he may not be as attractive as I first thought he was.
Also married, but...
You know. Also married. Well, of course, but it's not like, you know, this whole thing is happening in my head, so it's not like, you know. But the thing is, two things. One was, when I first saw him, he looked like really kind of like sort of... I had this whole image in my head of him being kind of this... kind of scruffy.
REI kind of.
Maybe, you know, in my head, he also, I think, had an Irish accent or something. But he, like, stays home and he's a writer or something like that.
He's just, what's his name, from Once?
And like, he's the guy from Once. Because he looks kind of like the guy from Once. But now I'm realizing maybe he just doesn't shave because he might be a little bit of a dirtbag.
He's just unemployed.
Yeah. And then I've seen this woman with the kid who's really, really unattractive. And so I just, like, if that's his wife or something, then I'm just like, oh. Then of course, he loses... You know, he loses value if, like,
it's
he's
like finding a lot of Toby Keith CDs or something.
Yeah. So I just keep telling you, maybe that's like his sister or the housekeeper or something.
Well, you know, are you going to. So is that a thing where you're going to contrive some sort of a. So I saw your wife out with you know, the kid the other day and waiting for him to go, oh, no, that was just, you know, that's just Loretta.
See, I've just got to decide. I think I have to make the decision at some point soon if I'm ever going to speak to him or not. And I'm thinking it's probably best if I never speak to him. And if I decide to never speak to him, then basically I can still continue to create any kind of magical fantasy land about him that I want.
Okay. You know, this whole thing's going to be subpoenaed at some point, right? You know, like 5 or 6 years from now, as you're trying to figure out who gets the house and the cars, like there's going to be a deposition and they'll be playing this entire thing. And you'll be sitting there in like black sunglasses in the courtroom staring down angrily and scribbling hateful messages to Patrick on a legal pad.
Well, as long as I keep having the unexpected morning sex with Patrick, it's not like, you know, there's any danger of me going after scruffy, dirtbag, sexy dad.
You know, and speaking of which, I totally misjudged. I don't know what the hell I was thinking of. I have an inappropriate song selection. I should have gone this way instead. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. So we'll end things now, kids. Don't forget, coming over up over at Cascadia.fm at 4 p.m., Don Taylor and Fatboy Roberts are going to be hosting Ham Fisted Radio. You can also find it later on at hamfistedradio.com. The Rick Emerson radio show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, the luscious and desirable Don Taylor. Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Hagler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakawa, whose mother, Adrian, celebrating her birthday today. So happy birthday to you from all of us. We want to thank our guests, including Mr. Aaron Mesh. Join us tomorrow when our guests will include Oregonian columnist and woman of the world, Anna Griffin. After a brief musical interlude, we'll have an encore of today's Legion of News episode, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. See you all tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Bye now.
Singing to the world, don't you see it all comes around?